Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Hello to everyone, and good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening, everyone. First of all, thank you to Umar for continuing these reviews on the Sandokai, and everyone at Canando that makes this possible. Today, we'll continue the review and the discussions of the talks on the Sandokai by Suzuki Roshi, giving at Tassajara on the summer of 1970 over a period of about 6 weeks. The Sandokai was written by a Chinese ancestor in the 8th century, Sekito Kisen. At that time, the context was that the schools of Zen were divided. The lecture in the Sandokai did refers at North and South. And this poem today is chanted in most Zen centers regularly. Today we'll review the first part of the 12th lecture, which is the last lecture, called Do Not Pass the Days and Nights in Vain. As it has been discussed previously, we should not, words are pointers to the true teachings or the source, as it is also referred. As it usually said, writings, lectures are fingers pointing to the moon, and we should make an effort not to forget that, which sometimes not easy. In our culture, we rely on words. So we should try to remember that. And Suzuki Roshi said that we should try to find the real meaning of words. But also he says, don't try to understand through your head. It's not that an easy advice to follow sometimes. At the beginning of the book, there's a version of the Sandokai that is the one that is usually chanted and the one used by Suzuki Roshi to give his lectures, his 12 lectures. But at the end of the book, there's another version of the Sandokai, which as it says, it's a compilation from these talks and from private discussions with Suzuki Roshi. It's slightly different in words. So let's start together. And we can see how there are subtle differences. The title changes from the harmony of difference and equality to oneness of one and many. Let's read it together. Oneness of one and many. The mind of the great sage of India was handed down closely from west to east. People may discriminate the dual from the kin, but in the true way, there's no ancestor of north and south or south. The true source is pure and stainless. The branch streams flow in the dark. Clutching at things is delusion. To recognize the truth is not always enlightenment either. The five senses, gates, and the five sense objects are interdependent and absolutely independent, interrelated endlessly, yet each stays in its own position. Since things have various natures, various forms, there's good and bad taste, sound and feeling. In darkness, superior and inferior cannot be distinguished. In brightness, the duality of pure and impure is apparent. The four elements resume their nature as a child has its mother. Fire is hot, wind blows, water wet, and earth is solid. For eyes there is color and form, for ears there is sound, for the nose there is smell, and for the tongue there is taste. Each being comes out from the root, as branches and leaves come out from the trunk, but both root and end should return to the original nature. The words we use are different, good and bad, respectful and mean, but through these words we should understand the absolute being or source of the teaching. Within blindness actually there is utter darkness, but you should not meet someone just with darkness. Within darkness there is brightness, but you should not see others only with the eyes of brightness. Darkness and blindness stand with each other, like one foot forward and the other behind in walking. Everything, all beings have their own virtue. You should know how to apply this truth. Things and emptiness are like a container and its cover fitting together, like two arrows meeting head on. When you listen to the words, you should understand the source of the teaching. Don't establish your own rules. If you don't practice in your every life as you walk, how can you know the way? The goal is neither far nor near. If you stick to the idea of good or bad, you will be separated from the way by high mountains or big rivers. Seekers of the truth, don't spend your time in vain. And as it was said, this is a compilation from these talks and from private discussions with Suzuki Roshi. The 12th lecture is about the last four lines of the poem. Practice is not a matter of far or near, but if you are confused, mountains and rivers block your way. I respectfully urge you, who study the mystery, don't pass your days and nights in vain. Who would invite someone to start reading? Here in practice is not matter of far or near.
Okay, Hernan, I'll take that.
Okay.
Practice is not a matter of far or near. This is very important. When you are involved in selfish practice, you have some idea of attainment. When you strive to reach a goal or attain enlightenment, you naturally have the idea, I am far from the goal, or I am almost there. But if you really practice in our way, enlightenment is right where you are. This may be rather difficult to accept when you practice Zazen without an idea of attainment. This is actually enlightenment.
And someone else can continue.
I can do it, Megan.
Okay. Hi, Megan. How are you?
Okay.
Nice to hear you.
Yes. Dogen Zenji explained that in self-centered practice, there is enlightenment and there is practice. Practice and enlightenment are events that we will encounter in our life. But when we realize practice and enlightenment as events that appear in the realm of the great Dharma world, then enlightenment is an event that expresses the Dharma world, and practice is also an event that expresses the Dharma world. If both express or suggest the big Dharma world, then actually there is no need to be discouraged if we do not attain enlightenment. Nor should we be extremely happy if we do attainment, because there is no difference. Practice and enlightenment have equal value. If enlightenment is important, practice is also important. When we understand this point within each step, we have enlightenment. But there will be no need to be excited about it.
Thank you, Megan. And then we start here. Now he says,
I could take that.
Okay.
Then he says, I respectfully urge you who study the mystery, do not pass your days and nights in vain. Oh, yeah. Koin muna shiku wataru koto nakare. Ko here means sunbeam, and in means shadow. So ko-in means day and night or time. Wataru means to spend or to pass. Nakare means not, and munashiku is in vain. Do not pass your days and nights in vain means don't goof off. Even though you work very hard sometimes, you may be spending your valuable time without actually doing anything. If you don't know what you're doing, we may say, oh, you're passing your time in vain. You may say, no, I'm striving very hard to put $10,000 into my savings account. But to us, that may not make much sense. Even though you work very hard at Tassajara during the work period, it does not always mean that you are doing the right thing. If you goof off, you are wasting your time. And even if you work very hard, maybe you are also wasting your time. This is a kind of koan for you.
Thank you. And the last one, who would like to read that?
I'll read it, Harlan.
Thank you, Diane.
When you do something with a purpose based on some evaluation of what is useful or useless, good or bad, more or less valuable, your understanding is not perfect. If you do things that need to be done regardless of whether the results are good or bad, successful or unsuccessful, that is real practice. If you do things not because of Buddha or truth or yourself or others, but for the things themselves, that is the true way. I cannot explain this so well. Maybe I shouldn't explain so much. You shouldn't do things just because you feel good or stop doing things because you feel bad. Whether you feel good or bad, there is something you should do. If you don't have this kind of feeling when you're doing something, you have not yet started on our way in the true sense.
Thank you, Diane. And here starts the first half of this talk to discuss about this lecture. I put some points. They don't need to be the thing to discuss, but were some points that caught my attention or surprised me. There are ideas to further the discussion. The first one that struck me is, with no goals or sense of attainment, there's enlightenment in practice. The second one is, practice and enlightenment have equal value. These two first ones were the one that surprised me most. With the third one, that is, what does Suzuki Roshi mean by equal value? Another one is when he says a beginner's practice and a great Zen master practice are not different. In Don't Pass Your Days and Nights in Vain, Suzuki Roshi's understanding is goofing off. Just that, very direct, very simple. It's just goofing off. And why should we do something, and its relation to practice? And the last one is, what insights or experiences have you had related to these teachings, especially any personal experience that you may have had or insights? And before going to the discussion, Vanessa, in her talk, she played a recording of Suzuki Roshi. So following her advice of looking for recordings, there's a recording that I would like to play before going to discussion. It is related to the first two topics about equality.
Even though you don't attain enlightenment, you have enlightenment, we say. No. That enlightenment means deep. That something exists here means something, you know, has already some reason why it exists here. And because of that reason, it makes sense, some sense. I don't know what sense. No one knows. But there must be some reason. And, you know, everything must have some virtue for itself. And it is, you know, very strange that everything has, no things are same, you know. One is different from others. So there's nothing to compare, you know, with you. So you have your own value. And that value, you know, comparative value or exchange value. It is that value, something more than that. So just when you are just on the cushion, you have your own value. And that value, because that value is related to everything, so that value is also absolute value. Maybe better not to say too much.
That video, I found it related to the equality that is mentioned and to the line that said that practice is not a matter of far or near. And the explanation of Suzuki Roshi saying that the practice of a beginner is the same as a practice of a Zen master. So those are the topics that it did surprise me very much. So I would like to see what do you think, what are the insights you have, or what experience you have, what experience that you may have had.
I think Carolina might have something to say, Hernan.
Yeah. Okay, and I put the question here as ideas. I mean, not the question, just some points.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I like the remark of, you know, everything has the same value, you know, and we're all different and we all have the same value. That's such an important truth.
And how do you think that is related to the practice, that the practice may be enlightenment in the practice? If we don't think about if we don't have a sense of attainment, if we don't have a goal.
Well, that's difficult, especially in Zen, where there's a hierarchy and where there's a teacher and you want to please your teacher. And, you know, you want to be better than other people and that kind of mentality, which the mentality of competition and pushing oneself forward and all of that, which is, you know, is very American, very Western, you know, that pushing self forward, which is actually the opposite of practice, which is letting go of the self, you know, get to know yourself and let go of yourself. Practice for practice's sake is the best way.
And that's what it caught my attention because in the, let me see if I find it.
You know, once I said to Les Gendoka-san, you know, that I am your student. Mm-hmm. And he said, no, we're all Buddha's students.
Well, and that's interesting because That is the message, if we can call it message, of this chapter that strongly caught my attention, because I haven't read it before and I haven't thought about it. And is because it is saying that the true practice is no attainment. And it is saying that practice and enlightenment have equal value. So actually, in our culture, and especially in a place like the Bay Area, competition is pervasive. Comparison are pervasive, and especially goals, to have goals, to put goals, to achieve, to have an achievement is part of the culture, it's part of the education, it's how schools work, it's how university works, it's how you're evaluated in society. Actually, not only to be an achiever is good, to be an overachiever is even more praised. But here we're practicing Zen, and we find that what Suzuki Roshi is saying here from the Sandokan is the opposite. And actually is saying that if we don't do that, if we don't practice without attachment, mountains and rivers block your way. And that is, for me, was new to see it so clearly said. But again, we can read the words, but what happened in your minds, what happened when we sit? That's why in that video, Suzuki Roshi says that when you sit, you have your own value, which is not actually a value. So going back to the Sandokai, there's a next chapter actually after the 12th chapter. There's an extra chapter. It's a talk given to some students of philosophy. And there Suzuki Roshi goes explaining the difference between equality and he doesn't use this word, but I imagine identicality. That equality and identicality is different. And he said that identicality actually doesn't exist because there's nothing that is identical to something else. As he says in the video, we have our own value. Everything has its own value. And a little bit upper, I mean, in a previous part of the Sandokai, he said that everything has its own virtue. So it's interesting that it seems that if we would be able to truly see not only ourselves with just our inherent values, but others with their inherent value, we are different. We are different in Sandokai terms, in the brightness. The brightness is the mundane, is the relative, and the darkness is the absolute, is the beyond. So in the beyond, we are equal. So when you mentioned about, you saying I'm your student, and let's say we're all Buddhas, that is exactly what Suzuki Roshi is explaining about the Sandokai. That in this world, we may be different in the roles, but as Buddhists in the practice, in the beyond, we are equal. And here it is said again, here the line says, I mean, in the explanation that is given says, practice and enlightenment have equal value. And it's very clearly said. It's very clearly said. And then that a beginner's practice and a great Zen master practice are not different. And what impedes us to, it seems that the message says that what impedes us to live that is our sense of attainment. Exactly what you said, Karina, is the sense of attainment which at the end is cultural. So that was my take on this. And I'm curious what kind of experience experiences anyone may have had about this equal value, not only in practice, but in real, in any interaction with reality, with the world. Any experiences where you perceive that actually there is a equal value and there's no need to compare. So if I was thinking that if we pay attention to these experiences that we may have, even outside practice, could inform our practice not to have a sense of attainment. Yes, Dan, hi.
It strikes me that if things are of equal value, that even when mountains and rivers block your way, that isn't necessarily any worse than enlightenment. I think it's pretty radical what they're saying here. What's being said here is that you can be, I mean, we're always going to be blocked by something. We're never going to have it right. But there's some understanding around that, even when we are blocked, that doesn't mean that that we are blocked. You know what I'm saying? You know, I think that this is pretty radical, and that it's the whole thing is paradoxical mm-hmm. to me. I mean, this is a koan that can't be explained, you know, in this discourse. So even when we talk about what's always disturbed me was mountains and rivers blocking your way, and you know, it just troubles me because I'm, you know, that's how I live my life. You know, I mean, it's there's a lot of blockage, and yet I don't think that means, it quite means what we often think it means. I don't think that that's a black and white thing saying that you don't get it. I think that mountains and rivers can block your way and you can get it at the same time, because it can't be any other way. So I'm going to leave it at that.
I will agree with that, because let's say, for example, we're practicing and we have a sense of attainment, then our practice will be blocked, as it says here. But then the next minute, we can work on it and we can reduce or eliminate the sense of attainment. And then the mountains and river will disappear. And then another day we have attainment again, and the mountain will appear. So that is not fixed. But as part of the paradox, pointing that having a sense of attainment or a goal and comparing if you are close or far away from attaining your goal affects your practice, that's what called my attention. And that if you manage by some way to reduce that, your practice actually will be enlightenment.
I think, as a person who compares myself to other people constantly, it's a good practice for me to not do that. But I think it's the beginner's mind that's important here. I think if you have a sense of attainment, then you're done, you know? And if you're looking toward attainment, it's something out there, not here. And our practice, I think, is about being here in this moment fully with ourselves and not always looking somewhere else or beyond where we are right here and right now. So really it's our practice, our daily practice, moment by moment, to be fully present and here and value the moment here. And what can we learn from this moment about ourselves or what our experiences are teaching us? So that's my take.
Yep. And Diane, do you feel or have you had the experience that, let's say through practice, because our practice helps us to be more aware.
Yes.
To be present. So do you feel or you have memories that when you practice and you are more present, that sense of attainment or comparison get reduced or dissipates?
I've never had a feeling of attainment. I've had a feeling of being fully present or beholding something in nature where it's just all consuming. And it's because I've maybe let go of judgment and just fully experienced the moment and being fully and present in that moment. In terms of sitting and practice, I think it's when we practice for long periods, like in the sesshin, I get a little bit closer to that, I think. I think it's just sitting and practicing, and that's really it.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Hi.
Hey, David.
Yeah. I want to share the line, even though you work very hard at Tassajara during the work period, it does not always mean that you are doing the right thing. Bear with me and I will share the story of the 60 cups of scallions. I was on a Sangha week maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And I was working in the kitchen during the morning work period. And it was one of those first mornings where sleep deprivation and all the Tassajara, a little bit out of it, right? So we get the assignment and we're chopping, I forget whatnot. And the assignment was to chop a great cups. We had a list. There was ingredients and a number and then a little symbol. And the symbol would mean each or cups or gallons, or whatever the unit of measure was going to be. So it was near the end of the period, and we set out chopping scallions, and the number was 60, a very large number. And oh my gosh, we're almost at the end of the period. And so we go into the refrigerator room, and we bring out the whole box of scallions, and we're chopping scallions and measuring, and slowly, slowly, the thing rises up to where 60 would be. And oh my gosh. So then he says, are you almost finished? I have 60 cups of scallions. Well, that's disturbing. Oh, okay. So anyway, he looks at the list, and the list required not 60 cups of chopped scallions, but 60 pieces of chopped scallion. And we had filled this bucket with the entire week's or month's supply of Tassajara scallions, and they were all chopped to smithereens. And boy, everybody felt untilted by this whole thing. I mean, you can tell by, there are many, many levels of miscommunications, failure to provide proper guidance, failure to check in with management. But the predominant thing, the dominant thing with the table of students was that we were given an assignment and we went all out on that assignment, and we didn't think to step away from it and check what we were doing. Perfect example of working very hard at doing the wrong thing. And I don't know if any of the leaders got into trouble for that. I wanted to stick around and see how much scallion soup would be served during the next few days. I was working very hard, very focused way, all the Zen kind of things, doing the wrong thing. anyway, that story was very embarrassing.
Yeah, thank you. And regarding work, this one line that is very powerful, I think, also saying that, I don't remember exactly, but more or less saying that in the way, in our practice, we should not do something because we think it's good. We should not stop doing it because we think it's bad. We should not do something because we think the result will be good, like the scallions, and we should not do it, we should not do it if we think that the result will not be good. It says that the reason we should do things is only because there are things to do. And that reminds me of Dayan with being present. And it's interesting because sometimes when we practice at Canon Do, there is that feeling. So it gives me a feeling or a sense that actually the practice works. Because we read the things, it sounds kind of impossible sometimes or too idealistic or even extreme. But some of the things that says here, at least sometimes when we are in practice, like Dayan mentioned about the Sechin, at the end of Long Sechin, when we do the practice, some of the things that sound here that may sound, that here said that may sound radical, they do happen. So I, reading it, I had that feeling saying, you know what, the practice works. If we do the practice works. What do you think about, and for me, I'm from Chile, so the language is not the same as growing up here. What is your take on don't pass your days and nights in vain? Suzuki Roshi describing it just as goofing off.
Hernan, Philip and Don both have their hands up.
Where is Philip? Oh, Philip. Hi, Philip.
I just wanted to comment on David's story, which was wonderful. I really loved the story. I don't think that's what Suzuki Roshi is talking about, yeah, in my opinion, in when saying that you can work really hard at Tassajara and I forget what, and not be incorrect practice or good practice. For me, I think what they were doing was wonderful in a way. I mean, I think what he's talking about is somebody who read the directions perfectly, had everything all lined up, everything was right, and they were in what you were talking about, Hernan, attainment. They were in attainment phase. They were in a sense of attainment about what they were doing. I think for me, that's what he's pointing to, not this sincere effort. People are just starting to work in the kitchen and make a mistake like that. But anyhow, I just wanted to comment on that. And I love the story again.
Thank you. Yes. Tom?
It seems as to me anyway that this is all a lot simpler than it sounds, and in point of fact, that by saying there's nothing to attain and not to be concerned with good and bad practice, is saying there is no such thing as good and bad practice, and it does work because the effort is the practice. You know, and all practice works. If you practice the violin, it works. And our lives, before we come to a Zen practice, is another practice. We've been practicing all our lives to be self-centered, to be attaining, to be that's a practice that we've done all our lives. And Zen is kind of a different practice. So in just the effort of that practice works. It just works, just making the effort. Whether you go, oh God, that was horrible practice. Oh, that was a really great practice, period. Regardless of what your judgments are about that, it works. Just the effort is the practice. That's how it seems to me. And that's been my experience. Because when I first started practicing, I could look back and go, let me see. I was doing absolutely who knows what, right or wrong, you know? But I would say it worked. It works. Even though I had no idea what the hell I was doing, I would have no way to do it. And in terms of the absolute and value, I can't conceive of what it would be that would have value in the absolute perspective, in what you call the beyond.
Mm-hmm.
What there would have value? How would value even have a place there? Value is a value in and of itself is a relative term. Value only exists in a relative sense. You know?
Yeah.
This is valuable compared to that. If I don't have anything to compare it to, I can't give it a value. And in the absolute, there is nothing to compare to anything else. You know, it's not a state where there are comparisons, I don't think. You know, from my experience anyway. So, and anyway, those are just some of the things that occurred to me in this conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. With respect to value, what I sense is that value shouldn't be the right word maybe to be used. Here we're again with words. Where we're dealing with language is not, because actually in a part he makes a difference. Look, read after the 12th chapter. It's called "We Are Just a Tiny Speck of Big Being," and it addresses this point. So what they try, and they go into brightness and darkness and the relative and the absolute and the oneness and the many. Remember that this talk is the harmony of difference and equality. And the other name given to the lecture using Suzuki Roshi words, that lecture is called Oneness of One and Many. So in that chapter, what Suzuki Roshi explains is that in the relative world, in the differences world, it's all difference, is what you mentioned. We have values to compare one to each other. We have different things. We have value. But the Buddhist practice is about the beyond. It always goes to the beyond. And in the beyond, our mind, our rational mind, our language mind collapses because we don't have the words and we don't have the means to express it. So the only thing we may do is sometimes receive hints or experience it. So he tried to explain in English language what is not explainable. That's what at the end he said, I'm saying too much. I shouldn't say too much. He said that a couple of times. But what he's trying to explain in this chapter is that in the absolute, those different values that you use in the relative world don't exist.
Yeah, it don't exist.
It doesn't exist. There's only an absolute value. But so he's using the word value, but what we should put, I think that what we should pay attention is that the absolute between value transform the value is not the value that we think anymore. So I it called a lot of my attention. So I was trying to think, how can that happen in the real world? And I came with one idea, is that I have a 10-year-old son. I remember an experience when he was 5. We were doing something and we were, let's say, it was an experience of oneness. And it's what the Sandoka is called, oneness of one and many. So I was with my son and I had this the sense that we're the same. We're not the same. We are one. And that experience of oneness, now reading this and looking backwards, oh, I was 50 something, he was 5, I was tall, engineer, he was in kindergarten. So here we can make all those comparisons. But I had that strong feeling that we were one. So oneness exists for the absolute. But this is what Buddhism says. And in that chapter, it's interesting. He uses a lot of language, but he explains it better. It is about that. It's very interesting. And I don't know if happy is the word, but kind of resonated when I read it because I never thought about it. I never saw an explanation like that. And looking back, it may happen. And then in another part, if we go back again to the student, the beginner's practice, and the Zen master practice, when they say they're the same, it's because of that oneness. So as a father and a kid can have oneness, maybe a student and a teacher can have oneness. And maybe we don't experience it more often because in our practice, Sandokai said that in our practice, if we have attainment and we make all these comparisons, we are putting these mountains and river in our practice. So that's what I found it very interesting. I never thought about it, but after reading it and looking back, let's say I have more trust, if that's the word, that oneness exists and can be experienced.
Yeah, I think that's true. For me, lately, I've even dropped oneness. I think oneness is can become another thing. And I'm sort of, my practice has reduced me to just this. Mm-hmm. And even that, I don't really know what the hell that means. But if you ask me what this is, I would just say it's just this. I wouldn't say it's one. I wouldn't say it's not one. But that's kind of where I'm at right now. Just kind of everything is just like dropping away, even oneness and non-oneness. And it seems to me you can't really say anything, but all I can come up with is just this.
And I will, if agree is the word, I will completely agree, because again, we're using language. We're using language for something that doesn't have a language. So that's what, remember the warning by Suzuki Roshi, which literally in two parts of the book, he says, we should try to find the real meaning of the words. But then he says, in another part, don't try to understand through your head. And this is what we're doing now. So all these words, value and all that, they're just fingers pointing to something that we cannot talk about. Let's go and sit and let's trust the practice and maybe we can experience some things. But
he says to read the back of the page later on in this chapter. Mm-hmm. Which I don't want to say anything more than that, but I agree with that 100%. That's what I'm talking about. The back of the page.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Thank you.
Hernan, Teresa has her hand up.
Ah, Teresa. Hi. Hola.
I was saying thank you for leading the discussion tonight. And thank you for sharing the video of Suzuki Roshi. I didn't have the chance to see many videos of him. I was inspired following, the exchange that you were having right now. I was inspired by what he said about having absolute value. When you sit, you have absolute value. And that's a that's an idea that is communicated by other teachers. You know, the way I understand it is when you see it, I heard it also phrased that way, you're sitting with the whole universe. And that always inspires me, especially now that I have to sit alone, you know, without a sangha. Then I think it's kind of like a magic. Sitting satsang is some kind of magic thing. And, you know, related to what Carolina was saying at the beginning, I've always find it very liberating of satsang that it doesn't have, for me, a competitive nature. For me, there is nothing. When I sit satsang, there's no competitive, nothing, no competition. I like that a lot. Anyway, thank you. I appreciated the discussion tonight.
Thank you, Teresa.
Hernan?
Umar.
You know, all this talk about the absolute and the relative always reminds me of what Alan Watts used to say. He used to say this whole divisiveness comes from Western thinking. He said the simple way to understand the difference between Western thinking and Eastern thinking is just all you have to do is, you know, say this. In Eastern thinking, you said this and that. He said just take the and out and stick a or in there, and you have Western thinking. So you're going, okay, this exists or that exists. And in Eastern thinking, they're saying, and so both are existing. They're both connected. And it just made me think of that you know, we are always putting qualifiers and quantifiers on everything. We're saying, oh, this is big, this is small, this is far, this is close. This is up, this is down, this is sideways, this is long, this is short, whatever you can think of. You know, just we're putting, you know, applying measures to everything, measuring everything all the time. And, you know, when you sit, it's just like after a little while, the measurement goes away. It's there. You're just there. That's it. That's it. There's no more, you know. You know, it's like, just like one day Les used to walk out on Wednesday night and I opened the wrong door and Les bowed to me and he said, you know, our practice is all about consistency. He said that, he turned around and walked to the back, to the kitchen. So it was just like, oh, okay. You know, so it's be here. That's all, you know, that I could take away from his, you know, just, I still remember that day when he did that to me in the evening. I was like, okay, I just got a reminder from the teacher saying, you're not paying attention. You know, that's what it is, you know, pay attention, be here. Don't go away, you know, be here. And so it's the same thing with zazen, you know, just when you go and sit zazen, you're here. There is no other place to, you know, to go, but it just reminded me of that. And thank you.
Thank you, Mar.
So, Hernan, it's 9 o'clock. I don't know if you have something you want to summarize or someone else has some thoughts they want to share?
No, nothing. Thank you. Thank you all.
This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org. do.org.